Hello and welcome to the Wide Open Air Exchange, coming to you from Gadigal Country. I'm Kristen Gallagher, and the Wide Open Air Exchange is a place to meet people with fascinating vocations, interesting ideas, and special interests. My guest today is handy woman Norma Dan, otherwise known as Ms. Fix-It. Norma does home maintenance, home repairs, lawns and gardens, running her own business, Ms. Fix-It Handy Woman. And I'm looking at photos of Norma's jobs on the Ms. Fix-It Facebook page. And in the garden, there's a big hedging job on a lily pilly, the repair of a garden path. And inside a house, there's a repair of a bathtub spout, installing shelves in the laundry, gyprock repair, screen door hinge repair, and on it goes. And Norma joins me in the studio to discuss the origins of her interest in this kind of work and what motivates her to be a handy woman.
Welcome. Welcome to the Wide Open Air Exchange and to 2SER. This is
Thanks,
great.
Thanks, Christine.
Yeah. I've seen the picture of your van, and it sort of prominently says, from memory, lawn care is a part of it.
Lawns, gardens, home repair.
Yes.
And it would encompass anything I can reach and everything you'd like to repair in a home except electrical. I won't touch it.
Yes, because that is a very technical specialist trade and because of what can go wrong, I suppose, if you mess around with the...
That's right. And I'm not trained in it, so I stay away. I'm not licensed in any of the things I do. I'm experienced.
Yes. So important distinction that if you were wanting a licensed plumber, electrician, those sorts of trades, then there's particular jobs that those licensed professionals do.
That's right. But leaking tap would only need someone in the home who's handy or someone who's done it several times before.
Yes.
And it's quite safe and easy to do. Yes, if you know what you're doing. They're all the kinds of things that a 1960s father would fix.
Yes.
I don't know how that... Culturally, that just developed as a man is expected to know those things and get those things done around the house.
Right.
It does, on the modern man, it's put a lot of pressure on them to have to do that, and not everyone is capable of doing it, men or women.
Yes, it's not a gendered role.
No.
It's more about... maybe the kind of brain you have, or the kind of how would you describe what makes somebody good at being handy? It's not gendered.
I think inquiry, investigating, working it out, analysing what's going on, and what might be wrong, and how to fix it.
Yes.
And if you're not interested in that, or you haven't got sufficient motivation to look it up, then you would throw your hands up and say, I've got to get someone in.
Yes.
However, I believe anyone can do it, absolutely anyone, if they were to put their mind to it and if they had the resources to get the tools or borrow them. But a little bit of research about how to keep safe, look at handy woman, handy man status, there are guidelines. Mm. We're not allowed to build walls over 1.2 metres. You know, there are restrictions. So these are all the smaller items that licensed trade would cover if it was any bigger.
Yes.
Or higher. Yes. Or require a building certificate to accomplish.
I see. So it's interesting you say, you know, that there are things that anyone could do if they put their mind to it, because I will use the internet. You know, that has become a great resource now for how-tos, for DIY instructional kind of things. There's videos and articles and all of that kind of thing. And there is a satisfaction in doing something yourself, in seeing it work and having done the research.
That's right.
But I imagine...
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but just particularly on that point. The internet is fabulous, and then it can be a foe as well, where they show videos of after 10 takes it works. And look, 80% of the time it could go well and you'll do it exactly as you've researched on the internet. However, it's the experienced person who knows what to do when it goes wrong.
Yes, and so the very next thing that I was going to say was, but I imagine what you must often see is you're getting called in when a person has tried to do it themselves and possibly made it worse or got it wrong. And so I can certainly see why it can be better to actually bring someone in who knows what they're doing.
I don't want to gender anything again, however, most of my calls in that scenario are from women who call and say, I've been waiting 17 years for my husband to fix this, or can you come and repair what my husband fixed?
Do you think that, is it not a coincidence that they've called you as Ms. Fix-It rather than, do you think do you get any sense of that? I don't know. I
mean, in the scenario of the husband, I'm not sure. You know, maybe they've had a discussion where, you know, he's not willing to get a tradesman in to see what's happened. So he's probably more willing to let it be repaired if a woman was coming in.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe save face in that way.
Yeah. I don't want another man coming in to fix see my work, work that I've botched.
Yes, maybe an embarrassment of sorts.
Yeah.
There are some men who call me, they say, I don't want a tradie to know that I can't do this. Not a lot, but that's been some of them. And the majority of my calls are from women who are tired of being told what they want or what they should do, rather than they don't feel they can ask for what they want done and how they want it done without being steered in another direction.
Yes, like in a sort of patronising way.
Yes.
Like, oh, yes, dear, that's all very well, but he says, let me tell you what you really should be doing.
Yes, yes. Look, at the handyman, handywoman level, again, the smaller jobs, you may not get a level of professionalism of a master builder or, you know, a licensed architect or someone like that who is there to listen and create exactly what you want.
Yes.
So that's in a different level.
You must have this very unique window or insights into a lot of those gender dynamics, you know, that and some of what I'm hearing, I think, is maybe some people might assume. So, and I shouldn't. Well, you're Ms. Fix-It, so you've got a gender identity in your business name. But it's interesting that it seems to be not just about the service that it would provide to other women. There's also an acknowledgement in the gendered pressures on men in this area. So that's really something I hadn't possibly thought about, and that's quite interesting that there's these still societal expectations on men, that they're going to somehow have some biological, natural ability to do the handiwork at home, which is just not true for a lot of men.
Well, that's right. I don't know what neurosurgeons are like at clearing a toilet blockage or...
Yes, that's right.
Or a historian in building a shed in the backyard.
Yes, because you can be... have other kinds of intelligences.
Oh, that's right. And for women as well.
Yes.
Women are expected to remain with the home duties or go and work in their profession, but no expectation to get a hammer and a couple of nails and put the fence palings back up.
Yes. I wonder, I mean, you know, you mentioned that some of it's kind of cultural in terms of the you know, you mentioned the 1960s dad. And I suppose also it's individual to specific upbringings. Like we lost my dad to cancer when I was only 9 or 10, and then we were a house of women. So my mum and four girls, so five females in the house. So from then we did everything. So I was mowing lawns when I was 10 because that's what you... the lawns had to get get done.
Necessity's the mother of invention.
Yeah. And so is there anything in your own, you don't have to speak about your own personal life, but is there anything from your own upbringing that you think has influenced your, either informed your own abilities or influenced your attitude to doing this kind of work?
I would say 99% is exactly what you've said.
Yeah.
My father and my four brothers all repaired everything, and they are 1950s, 1960s kind of people,
right,
where resources were not abundant as they are now. Money was very tight.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a necessity there to fix everything. But they were very gender oriented, where my four sisters,
this is a big family,
yes, were expected to cook and clean, maintain the house in that way.
Right.
They all sew very well. I've had the best of both worlds. I used to follow my mother and sisters around and watch them sew, and I equally would follow my dad and my brothers around and watch them fix things.
Yes. So were you one of the younger?
I'm the youngest.
You're the youngest.
I'm number nine.
Out of nine.
Yeah.
Wow. And is it otherwise evenly split between the brothers and sisters? How many?
Four brothers and four sisters. Yeah.
Wow, this is, I mean, sorry, I want to be careful here because I don't want to sort of make your life and your family like a scientific case study, but how perfectly balanced your perspective has been growing up with the youngest and having four of each brother and sisters in the home.
I think it's a timing thing as well,
yeah,
where if my older sister had said she wanted to be a carpenter, it would have been more laughable than when I said it.
Yes.
I said it at 16. I was told girls don't do that, and so I was steered away from that.
Right.
However, it would have been even more ridiculous if she had said it in the 60s.
Yes. And so what was that like when you knew you wanted to do, you know, you had that clear idea at 16 of wanting to be a carpenter but steered and successfully steered away from it? Like, were you wanting to do it as a trade and you were told, no, no, no?
I equally had a passion for sport.
Mm.
So I became a physical education teacher.
Did you?
So that was another natural line for me.
Yeah.
But I always kept my interest. I did multiple TAFE courses in carpentry and building cabinets and things like that.
Right. That's so interesting because... Sorry, I'm you're speaking to a lot of the themes that come up on this program in that I'm sorry to the to someone who's a listener who's heard me say this a million times before, but one of the things that I'm really interested in and curious about is vocational identity and whether there's some things that are really intrinsic to who we are, and it might not be a job as such, but something that then informs the jobs that you do. And so, for example, you might be a carer and then that works well in certain settings like in nursing or in other kinds of kind of social work, or you might be a writer and then that could work well in the arts, or it could be in copywriting, or it could be in admin.
I've always been drawn to mathematics.
Maths.
Yeah. I'm not sure why. I just had an interest in what my brother was doing. He was studying calculus and various other things at university when I was younger.
Mm.
And I would look at his books and I would think, oh, that's fantastic. I want to understand that.
Yes.
I don't know where that came from. And in being drawn to that, I'm drawn to problem solving.
Yes.
And I can apply that problem solving in anything, when I'm cooking, or when I'm sewing, when I'm building a wall.
Yes.
I did enjoy seeing how sewing can create. That's the other thing I saw, because my mother at that time was earning money at night by doing piecework and making hundreds of shirts, you know, just to help with the income. So yes, I'm from a background where new immigrants to Australia working in all the lowest paid jobs and getting ahead and getting your own home through sheer hard work and sacrifice.
Yes, yes, by working late at night, by taking the second job, by all of that, just digging deep. And yeah, I mean, I don't have that exact experience. It's not, my mum wasn't, I suppose, technically an immigrant. She moved out from, she was the 10-pound POM, you know, that came out from England in 1970. My dad was a country from the Australia, in the regional New South Wales, but they were unskilled workers. We grew up in public housing, but working poor in a way, like dad worked 6 days a week. Yes. Mum had jobs whenever she wasn't having children. Working people.
I think we've had a similar background.
Right. Mm. Yes. And where did your parents migrate from?
Lebanon.
Oh, from Lebanon. Yeah, we've had a few guests on this program who've had the Lebanese migrant experience to Australia. And I think what you described then does have echoes of some of those guests who said they came here and just dug in and made the best and did also what they could to bring a bit of the Lebanese culture with them in terms of food and culture and but really working hard to re-establish here because those particular guests had had left Lebanon during the conflicts there and re-establishing from scratch in Australia. So anyway, I'm sorry, I'm taking this a bit off. Commenting more so than asking a question there.
Yeah.
Maybe we could reset.
Being drawn to the mathematical.
Yes,
and
maths.
And the logical.
Thank you. I've heard mathematicians and astrophysicists who use maths a lot say that maths is like a language that helps you to understand the universe and why things do what they do. And so this, what you're describing sounds like an applied mathematics.
Yes.
That it allows you to know how to measure, know angles, know what to do technically in order to have the finished product of whether it's furniture or whether it's with fabric. There's mathematics is the kind of key to the problem solving in what you're trying to do in those kind of, in that realm?
Yes. There's a level of computation going on to give me a perspective where logically the water may be leaking from over there, but that doesn't make sense because the angle is not right.
Right, yes.
It just comes up in so many things.
It's technical, not just common sense. Because if you, because I don't have, that's what I'm lacking. I don't, maths didn't ever compute for me. Maths looked like a foreign language to me. It didn't, the way that you looked at your brother's calculus and went, oh, that's so, I looked at it and went, oh, I don't get it. It doesn't, it didn't resonate. Mm. So you understand, you see, is it somewhat intuitive that your ability to kind of, like you said, see the angles of the flow of water?
That's right. It's a shame that women traditionally have not been allowed to pursue possibly their skills in that area.
Yes.
And they let it go because their friends or their family are saying certain things to, you know, steer them away or they're not interested. Mm-hmm. And then a woman would have to go and participate with other men who are interested.
Yes. Which would have its own difficulties, I imagine.
Well, that's right. And then you're almost always the only woman in the room, things like that. So it's not an attractive pursuit, let's say. I had some kind of internal determination. I think I might be the kind of person that if you're told you can't do that, that's what you want to do.
Yes. Yes.
Whereas some people will say you can't do that and they go, oh, okay.
That is so interesting because you've started to answer my next question there is that I was thinking about how, what does it say about you that you have carved out this for yourself even though being told at 16, no, you can't, that's not a pathway for you.
Mm.
There's a kind of, I get a sense of a determination but also a sense of like almost like clarity of you knowing that that is a path that you want to carve out.
I regret that I started so late doing the work professionally. Mm. I don't regret being a PE teacher.
Yeah.
I was very happy in a corporate office as well because my math skills were used there for organising and scheduling and analysing data. So I'm a spreadsheets person and that was interesting to me.
Yes.
But I'm a physical person. So either the physical education teacher or a carpenter met all of my desires to be physical and to be a problem solver.
Yes, whereas the application of it within the kind of corporate administrative setting satisfied as some aspects of it, but not the physical part.
No, and yeah. I'd be sitting at the computer for 8 to 10 hours.
Yes.
My arm on the mouse gave in eventually, and I believe I lost a lot of my eyesight to sitting at a screen for so long.
Yeah.
I had the kind of eyesight that I thought I would never need glasses. So I was very surprised when I had to get glasses for reading up close. I can see to the moon, but
can't read a menu.
Yeah, that's right. I'm one of those people you can see in the restaurant and they all get their glasses out of their bag.
Yeah. And it's also not the first business that you've had. Is that right? Did you also, for a couple of years, have a computer-related business?
That's right. In the corporate industry, I was focused around IT. Mm. So I was doing procurement specifically for IT. I had a very in-depth knowledge of computer parts and what goes with what.
Yes.
So a natural progression from that is to do computer hardware repairs.
Right.
And at that time, that's when you would have a big computer box with a hard drive, video card, sound card.
Yes. So more. So we're sort of thinking, is this sort of like maybe late 90s, early noughties around then?
Yes. Yeah. And you could go and change someone's sound card or upgrade their video card or swap out their hard drive. These days, to pay someone to do that physically is 3 times more than buying a new one. And that's a real shame because there's so much going to landfill a result.
What I'm hearing, I think, is it sounds like along the way you've responded to needs as well. So there's by having a business where you were going out to help people repair with the hardware, by having a business where you're going to people's homes to help with, you know, what is needed in their homes, in their gardens. So there's kind of two things I think possibly go with that, and that's there's an entrepreneurialness maybe, but also a kind of giving, a kind of wanting to help and assist.
I do like to help people, especially if I see need. I would have been setting up a new printer at someone's house. I remember a specific example, and they were bemoaning that they went to make a cup of tea and their drawer was stuck, the kitchen drawer was stuck. And I just intrinsically, automatically, I don't know what it was, said, I can fix that.
Right. So you're there to do the computer, but you're saying, oh, do you want me to just have a go at the drawer as well?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And then that's seeded the idea that you could be doing that.
I had been repairing things for my family and friends for years at no charge. And I thought, I think I'm at a point where I could make the same money doing this as being in the corporate office.
Yeah.
To be honest, it turns out you can make way more.
Love that. So but you had there was a leap of faith or a risk that was involved at some point when you're like, I'm going to give up this sort of stable, steady income with holidays and all of that, start a business.
That was the hardest thing.
Yeah.
That was specifically the hardest thing, that I would be running everything, trying to plan holidays and account for them,
yes.
trying to plan for superannuation,
mm.
Eventually getting so busy that I had to make a decision, employ more people or just tone it down and stay a one-person band. It was very scary for 2 years.
Yeah.
So where I wasn't well known yet.
Because reputation is everything, I imagine, with the kind of work that you do.
Well, I don't advertise anymore after that 2 years.
Right.
And that was 9 years ago.
And now it's word of mouth. Is
absolutely,
it a return,
word of mouth.
Return business.
I've given away, there's no business card, no, nothing is required other than someone rings their friend and says, I know someone who can do that.
Because that's enough work for you. I'm hearing, decided not to expand by having, you know, employees or subcontractors,
right.
and things like that. So you only want the amount of work that you can manage yourself, which is enough without advertising or marketing yourself. Because
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
I could run 6 vans.
Mm.
However, I cannot find 6 women interested in the broad range of issues that require fixing.
And finding people who are as good as yourself, I imagine, as
well. An eye for detail. I can help someone with that.
Okay.
You know, you can develop that over time. It's just experience.
Yeah.
Young women now, I'm very jealous of. They are going into diesel mechanic and, you know, all these things I would never have imagined that we could do. I would have done all of them, you know, at some point. But because of that, they can just go off and do all of those very specific trades.
Specialist,
yes.
Specialised.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas the 1960s dad, broad range of skills. Have the knowledge to be entrepreneurial.
Yes.
And we could grow a corporate, you know, a multifaceted business around it.
Yes.
And have a call centre.
Mm.
Then you become one of those businesses where you don't know anybody.
Yes.
Whereas I'm personally that one person that they trust in their home.
I totally get it, and because you care about the quality,
yes.
as well.
Yes, I would do it for myself and to do it to last.
Yes.
Do it properly.
It sounds like you would be really excellent at property management, you know, like you, because there would, you know, in terms of being a caretaker of a particular, you know, estate or something, some people's estates and that kind of thing, if being able to do anything, everything around.
Well,
a
that's
property.
Right. I think my ideal semi-retirement job would be to be the, what do they call it in America? The super?
Within like a building.
Yes,
the superintendent.
Like for a preschool.
Yes.
And I'm their handy person
right.
that they call on.
Yes.
And when they don't need me, I won't be working. And when they do, I did train a young woman who was already a licensed cabinet maker. So she had aptitude for construction and handling power tools. That was great. She worked with me on every job for a year and broadened her skill set. So now she's gaining more experience. There was a selfish reason to it. I wanted to take a year off and travel Australia.
My.
So I left her with all of my clients.
And was that okay? Did it?
She could do possibly 80% of the jobs.
Okay, that's pretty good for someone who you've just brought
and
in.
And she didn't have as many tools as I did, so it was hard for her to do everything and to buy everything all at once. It just wasn't practical. But I came back from my trip and she had already built up her own client set and now she's too busy to help me.
Oh, I see. So that's also what happens when you get someone up to speed but they're technically not working for you. It becomes their own.
That's right. I'm happy with that. I always saw that was a goal to get her on her feet so she
Great.
Could be independent.
Oh, I see.
Because I didn't I didn't want to have the six vans.
Yes.
I just wanted someone to cover for me while I was away.
Yeah.
And then for her to take it up another level, and now there are two handy women in Sydney instead of none.
Right. So it's not about being competitive. It is actually about lifting each other up. It's about supporting each other. It's about growing.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe if I was 35, I would think competitively, more competitively.
Yeah.
But I'm older than that now,
yeah.
And my priorities have changed. So if I can influence more young women to take this path,
that's
what I would love to do. That's part of the reason why I came to the interview, so that people could think about that, maybe even let their teenage daughters know.
Yes.
That you don't have to have a specific trade. You could possibly do a bit of everything.
I really admire and respect you for that, and also that I can see in the way the conversation has gone, there's always a risk with when you invite someone who has a business that they might have the tone of selling the business, which is not what we do here. But, you know, it's also natural to want to say, oh, and call me for this, and this is my business, and this is why this is what we do.
I can't fit any more work in.
Yes, so you know, it's obvious that your motivation isn't about that. You've spoken a lot about the...
It's always progressing the status of women.
That's awesome.
I'm a feminist, what can I say?
Yeah.
I didn't like being told no, and I imagine there are other women out there who are suppressing their natural desires and abilities.
Yes. Well, thank you so, so, so much for doing this and for coming in, and it's been such an awesome conversation, like exactly the kind of conversation I enjoy having, you know. And I also love what you said about that semi-retirement plan, because I don't want to retire, like fully retire. I want to get to a point where what I'm doing is sustainable and I don't have to necessarily do as much of it, but I don't want to retire from it. I don't relate to people who have I've just got to get through until I'm this age and then I can start enjoying my life.
Yes, that's often too late.
Yes, I want the work to be part of the enjoyment of my life.
Yeah.
And it sounds like maybe that's where you what you're doing with Mids Fix It.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. If there's anything else that you want to say...
There is something else. Mm. I'm also a very big advocate for recycle, reuse, repair.
Yes.
And if we can save something from landfill by fixing it or upscaling it, that's my other main goal.
Yes. And if more people look to doing that, and if there's a greater need for services like your own that you provide, there may actually then also be more attraction for people to go into that kind of work, I imagine.
Yes, young men and young women becoming focused on repair rather than focused on, just get a new one.
Yes, it's broken, buy a new one, into the landfill.
Yes.
They're nice and they're cheap because of the way that the global supply chain is now. But if we get out of that mindset of things are easily replaceable, because it is true that there is now that inbuilt obsolescence into objects in the way that they didn't used to be.
Right. I don't know enough to speak about economics. However, I can see that there's so much pressure to buy.
Yeah,
you know, the news is always talking about, well, we didn't spend this much at Christmas. We didn't spend as much at Christmas time this year as we did last year.
Yes.
So now our economy is, and so that kind of push to buy is incredibly sad.
I agree. Yes, and I've seen it in my lifetime where it used to be normal to have the TV and toaster repair shop.
That's right. They are so scarce
so
now.
So scarce.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there are people such as yourselves who will do that kind of work in people's homes. So,
I would love to give a plug to the Bower.
Yeah, what's the Bower?
The Bower is a recycle centre.
Oh, is it Marrickville?
It was in Marrickville. Yes. I think they've moved to Summer Hill.
Yes.
They needed bigger premises, which is good.
Okay. And how does that work?
People donate
yep.
unwanted items and the bower will sell it to – they're not for profit, so
yes.
the money they make goes into repairing something else that comes in.
Great.
Running workshops, even running workshops for women on how to use power tools.
It's good. I think there is – I think the tides are turning. I get a sense that the generation coming through have become much more mindful around, you know, rejecting fast fashion and being more aware of reusing and so I
– I hope so. Yeah, I look forward to that, yes.
I'm optimistic.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. This is absolutely fabulous. We'll put links. I know that you don't need or want any more work, but people, I think, might be still interested in seeing examples of your work, if it's okay if we just link to you.
Oh, there are the people who don't want men going through the house where their elderly mother is living, you know, so we just need more women to go into scenarios like that and women's refuges and childcare centres.
Totally. And it's not to say that all men are predators or anything like that. And it's not, but I know.
But the statistics don't look favourably.
No, there are violent crime. That, you know, it is a fact that if you're a vulnerable person, I can only speak for myself because I don't know the statistics, but I do have a partner, but I live alone and I live in a small studio where my bed is out and visible. Mm. So when a tradesperson comes to my home, they're essentially standing in my bedroom, whether they're working in the bathroom or in the kitchen. It's just one open space.
Yes.
And that person may be a beautiful human being.
Yes.
But as a woman, I still feel vulnerable in that moment of having that person in my I worry. I hope there's no suggestion here of anything because my bed is here, and so you know,
it's hard to explain that to men because they don't understand. They don't live that experience.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I keep hearing stories from young women who say, "This trade person came in and was pressuring her to go on a date." She had just called him to fix the light switch.
Yes, that's
there are too many stories like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we'll end there. Other than just to say thank you again for coming. Thank you for coming in the spirit of openness and also in sharing such important messages with our listeners. So, Norma Dan, Ms. Fixit, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thanks, Christine. Yeah. Thanks to SER.
Thank you. It's been great. Thanks again to Norma Dan, a.k.a. Ms. Fixit Handywoman, for being an excellent guest on the Wide Open Air Exchange. And, just on that last topic there about women being vulnerable, we were sort of there speaking in the context about having a tradesperson coming into your home. But I might add, security guards, you shouldn't be hitting on women in the venues that you're working at. In my former life when I was going out dancing a lot, that would happen too many times, where the security guard is somebody who you should have full confidence is looking out for you and your safety. You can't feel safe with someone who you know is hitting on you. So anyway, these are the things that women do deal with when we're out and about and even in our homes. Yeah, I'll leave it there. Thanks to Vape Dads for use of the track Whiskey Priest for the Wide Open Air Exchange theme music. And thank you for listening. I'm Christine Gallagher. Thank you. Bye for now.